It is my pleasure to present...
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down. Here's Carmichael Dave.
Scott Howard Cooper, the bottom of the hour, his forthcoming book.
Scoop!
Steve Kerr. I read about almost a quarter of it at Disneyland at one point while I was taking a break at various times. I just kept picking it back up.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice enough to send us an advance on our phones. And then I didn't get a chance. I thought I'd have it done by the time he came on today, but it's a book.
yeah, it has pages.
I don't read too good.
And print. Words and letters.
Enthralling, though. And Steve Kerr is a very interesting topic. Plus, we'll talk to Scoop about the NBA in general, as we will with Chris Mannix, who's got some explaining to do. The only media member to leave Tyrese Haliburton off the Rookie of the Year voting. And we can talk to Chris about a lot of things, including Anderson Silva, Cesar Chavez Jr. over the weekend.
You say we don't get Chris on all the time, so I'd like to discuss a little boxing.
Yeah.
Pugilist action.
You know,
the science, the sweet one.
As we get in the Soundgarden, and the first take is going to be Charles Barkley here. I've been having a lot of fun with Ben Simmons' takes over the last couple weeks.
You've had some.
And my issue with Ben Simmons or Rudy Gobert and the criticism, and this is really what I've been pushing. It's not the criticism, the fair criticism. It's that we are so knee-jerk. We are so black and white right now, really in a lot of ways, but sports in particular. I wrote down during the break just a couple things for you, Jay. It's from a year.
Me specifically?
For you, the Royal Year. Remember when Paul George was trash in the playoffs?
I remember Pandemic P very well.
You remember when Kevin Durant was just trash overall and had to hang on with the Warriors?
I remember when Kevin Durant was the worst player in the NBA.
Remember when, true or false, Kevin Durant gained more respect with a lot of people in losing this year than he did winning with the Warriors?
Fact.
Remember when Giannis couldn't get his team past the first or second round and he was trash?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember when
Phil Budenholzer is now taking all that, go on.
Remember when Lloyd Pierce got screwed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Rick Carlisle, former Mavs coach, said that as
well. Hugely screwed. He got screwed and the Atlanta Hawks didn't know what they were doing. Remember when Devin Booker was just a scorer? That's it.
I called him better Kevin Martin at one point, but that's okay.
And I'm not here to say that none of those things, especially at the time, didn't have hints of truth in them.
But the Booker one's really bad.
but now Rudy Gobert is trash.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons is trash. Playoffs expose things, and other teams get paid to win. And I just need some gray area here because guess what? Neither of those guys are trash.
Listen, if those guys are trash, call me the garbage man because I will collect them all day for my basketball
team.
Happy
to have them on our team, except the salary part. All right, Soundgarden right now.
Soundgarden. Soundgarden. The cuts and clips that are catching our eye today. Soundgarden. It's time to go round the world with Soundgarden.
Ben Simmons could be an all-star. But that's all he can be until he learns how to shoot. My second best player can't shoot. I can't go to him with the game on the line. I don't even have him in the game. He didn't want to throw the kid on the bus. It doesn't matter. You can't have a guy on the court who's afraid to shoot the basketball.
Yeah.
He's right. Lie told.
Let me throw in a couple of bonuses here. Here's Doc Rivers being asked about Ben Simmons.
Doc, you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. You know, so I don't know the answer to that.
I believe that's David Aldridge on the question. That's that is not an endorsement from your coach. And then, here's Joel Embiid on the turning point of the game, which is really Joel Embiid on Ben Simmons.
Man, I'll be honest. I thought the turning point was, I don't know how to say it, but I thought the turning point was just, you know, we had an open shot and, you know, we missed, we made one free throw.
Okay, bad audio. Joel said, I thought the turning point was when we had an open shot and we made one free throw. That was in reference to Ben Simmons having an open dunk, dishing it to Matisse Thybulle, who then went one of two from the line. That's Joel Embiid openly throwing Ben Simmons under the bus. Doc Rivers, I have less of a problem with.
I feel like not openly, but he very passive-aggressively without saying. If he would have said his name, then he's openly doing it. He passive-aggressively did it.
I 100% disagree. Joel Embiid knew for a fact 100% of everybody would know exactly who he was talking about.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was very passive-aggressive.
He threw his guy under the bus. And now it is clear that Daryl Morey has to trade Ben Simmons in the offseason.
Or Joel Embiid.
I agree.
I'm just saying, I think the larger scale is that pairing. It has never fit. I thought Daryl Morey did a really good job of trying to make it fit this year with some of the guys he acquired, but it's just not going to fit.
I am so rooting for Ben Simmons in this situation. He has a confidence issue.
Yeah.
He has a shooting issue. And quite frankly, he has a work ethic issue.
Does he have an out of position issue? Do you buy that argument?
Here's the thing. He's probably best suited in a 4/5 Draymond Green role.
I agree.
And I think he needs to go somewhere where they take. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you'd read this or not, but this was quite interesting. Reading some people who'd played with and coached Ben Simmons before. You know he's right-handed.
Yes.
You know he shoots left-handed.
Kevin O'Connor from The Ringer has been standing this for years, yeah. And I agree with him. It's like, dude, you're shooting with the wrong hand. That's your problem.
He's right-handed, and his dad wanted him to shoot left-handed.
Which is so dumb.
If this isn't a Rick Vaughn put the skull and crossbones glasses on moment.
I understand Little League dad who wants his son to throw left-handed. I don't understand want my son to shoot left-handed.
I mean, this is Inigo Montoya, Carrie Elwes in Princess Bride. Mm-hmm. I'm not left-handed either. This is one of those things where he needs a new environment. I can think of one in particular. That'd be
San Antonio.
Actually, probably be really good.
Yeah.
For number two.
Soundgarden.
Just seeing our fans and how they stayed to the end and how they were cheering. It just felt good. It was a great feeling, you know. And like I said, the team been starving for some success. The fan base has been doing the same thing. And, you know, to me, I just, you know, I always look at it differently. Like, you know, I know the Lakers are out, and there's a lot of Laker fans here. But once the Lakers are gone, if we're not playing the Lakers, you should be cheering for the Clippers. And that's just how I feel.
Amen. Let them know, Tyronn Lue. Don't need to root for the JV anymore. Root for the varsity. Clippers.
Former Laker Tyronn Lue.
Lakers NBA champion Tyronn Lue.
Number three.
Button.
Soundgarden.
It's a product of my environment. You know, I always credit, you know, the different situations that I've lived in and growing up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then moving to Moss Point, Mississippi. You know, for me at that time, that was a big culture shock. You know, just two totally different demographics, but, you know, I fell in love with culture.
All right. Devin Booker deserves a lot of credit, and my God, did he have a great game one. Triple-double without Chris Paul. Also, recommended reading. It's a quick read. Google Players Tribune, DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's an excellent read. It's on the culture of the Suns, the effect of Chris Paul. And how I think for Kings fans especially, this is a tremendous read. And I'm finding out a lot more about DeAndre Ayton as he progresses in this league that I like more than just he's just a quiet giant out there, you think, right? And then you start reading about this kid's personality, and I call him a kid respectfully. There's a lot more to DeAndre Ayton than meets the eye.
I think it's almost gotten lost in the shuffle because of Trae Young and Luka Doncic's early success, all-star, all-NBA appearances. And then when you look at the Suns, it's the Booker and CP3 show, Monty Williams, James Jones.
Right.
DeAndre Ayton is really freaking good, and I think he's going to be an all-star in the next couple of years.
How much more time do we have left?
Well, we've got about a minute.
Okay, turn the sound out real quick because I want to get serious. I said this over the weekend. When Suns and Four guy beat the hell out of Nuggets guy, I didn't have a crazy problem with it because Nuggets guy tried to cheap shot Suns guy.
And for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, there was a fight that ensued at a game. A Suns fan that kept yelling, Suns and Four, Nuggets guy and Suns guy then
exactly
converge.
And Suns guy, by the way, it should be said, was in Denver for this game.
Mm-hmm.
Suns guy is now a celebrity in Phoenix.
Selfie guy.
Devin Booker gave him a jersey and tickets. By the way, not for nothing, but Suns guy also was sans shirt underneath his jersey guy, which I told you many times that is a dead giveaway. Then you saw another fight between Clippers fans and Suns fans yesterday. If you are guy that's going to, or girl who's going to these games to get drunk and fight, you're trash.
You're the worst.
You're not repping your city and repping your team. You're disrespecting them.
You're representing douchebaggery. That's what you're representing.
You're representing the people in high school that never got past it.
Right.
And
that SDE we were talking about earlier. You're representing that.
I can tell you right now,
when the Kings are in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I saw something like that happen, I would trash that fan. You got moms and dads and kids going to these games. It's not a boxing match. You're not part of the team. This isn't ancient Rome. We don't need that. And glorifying this is just stupid. It's not a boomer take. It's a have some decency and don't be a piece of garbage take.
There's no rhyme or reason ever to start a fight at a sporting event. There's no rhyme or reason to get so wasted that you are just the most obnoxious human being alive. I don't care the atmosphere. I don't care who's there, what team, what scenario. There's no reason to do it. Just go and enjoy the damn game.
I know.
Stop trying to make it about you, guy.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I know we're late, but if the NBA wasn't so hypocritical and they're worried about Russell Westbrook getting popcorn on him, which they should,
right?
You need to start chucking these fools out and maybe not ban them for life, but how about if you fight, you're banned for the rest of the year or you're banned next year. Get serious about that, because I can tell you right now, your fans are a lot less protected than your players. I'm talking about your other fans, your innocent fans. They're a lot less protected than the players, but they're, to me, just as important to protect as those players. We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
All righty. Three for madness. Well, let's talk about Ben Simmons and the Sacramento Kings, of course. Let's talk about these playoffs and where they rank. And big market versus small market. Which is better when it comes to engagement in these playoffs? We'll talk about all that next.
One, two, three.
It's three for madness time.
Three for madness. Three questions, three answers.
One, two, three. Woo!
It's three for madness. Here's question one.
His new book on Steve Kerr coming up shortly, very soon. Old friend Scott Howard Cooper, former B writer, former writer in a lot of places.
The legendary Scott Howard Cooper.
The man who once figuratively B-slapped me outside of a Sacramento Kings locker room when I was a young cub in this business. Taught me a very good lesson. Will join us at 7:35. 8:05. Scott Howard Cooper at 8:05. Chris Mannix. 7:35. Chris Mannix.
Christopher Mannix.
Yeah.
That's what his mom calls him.
We should use his first name because he's in trouble.
Hey, Chris.
New poll out. Today's poll question. Would you rather have the Kings were going to trade Buddy Hield and some combo of pick or picks? Would you rather have Ben Simmons or Kristaps Porzingis?
That's not a real thing.
Sure it is.
Anybody who puts Kristaps Porzingis their toe should be stepped on.
Question number one.
So, what would you give up for Benjamin Simmons?
I think the idea being floated right now, and by the idea being floated right now, and I think is an idea that I have floated. So assuming the Kings stay put, 8, 10, 12, somewhere in there is where their pick should be. And by the way, that draft lottery, what, tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll find out very
Most
quickly.
Most nervous 10 minutes of my life usually is that day.
I'm with you. It's something in the neighborhood of Buddy Hield and that pick and possibly Marvin Bagley for Ben Simmons. That's what's floating around right now. And I think that's about the best the Kings could do without going crazy. It's a fascinating, fascinating exercise. You have a 24-year-old who has made the All-Star team 3 out of 4 years. You have a 24-year-old who has been All-NBA first defensive, you know, first team defense 2 out of 4 years.
All-league.
All-league. Who also has to be pulled in playoff games because he won't shoot, can't shoot.
Can't shoot, won't shoot. Although, Rockefeller Records, baby.
Although, okay. Haters, saw a stat yesterday. Did you know Ben Simmons shot 100% from the field in the fourth quarter in that series? That is a fact. I'm not making it up.
He was how many field goal attempts?
3-3.
Okay. In 7 games?
Yeah.
So he played more games than he had field goal attempts in the fourth quarters.
Here's the only question. I mean, there's a lot of questions. Ben Simmons is owed $33 million, $35 million, $38 million, and $40 million over the next 4 years. That's a lot of money.
Not chump change.
You also do have Ben Simmons under control. And you are a team in the Sacramento Kings that can't get free agents. You are a team in the Sacramento Kings that, as Monty has said many times, wants to make a swing. Listen to me when I tell you this. I don't know that the Kings are going to get Ben Simmons. In fact, I would say the odds are against it quite favorably. But this is the exact, listen to me, this is the exact type of deal Monty's going to look for.
Go ahead.
A star that has low value right now.
Lower value.
That has high value. Upside that is in peril. Now, I don't want to compare what Ben Simmons is going through to what Chris Webber went through with the Wizards before he came here.
Yeah.
Other than to only say both guys have perhaps artificially lowered value right now and are young, and in Ben Simmons' case is under team control for 4 more years.
Let me put it not so gently. If there is a deal on the table for Ben Simmons and it doesn't cost you one of De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Haliburton, that deal will be made within 5 minutes of taking the phone call.
I think you, and you've got Daryl Morey who needs to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Monty McNair who worked for Daryl Morey for years. There's a relationship there.
A tight relationship.
Generally, think of all the boxes this checks. Mm-hmm. Now, generally when stars get traded, they get traded to the separate conference. Check two. The money works in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Philly gets a shooter they covet to go along with Seth Curry to surround Joel Embiid.
Yeah, you're throwing Joel in the post, and let's just put all the shooters around him and see where we go.
You get a first-round pick to work with. That's a good first-round pick. Not mm-hmm. a top five, but a good first-round pick. You get a high-upside guy, Marvin Bagley. The money works.
Yeah, and don't we said it, but don't gloss over the relationship between the two GMs. We just saw this with the Kemba Walker trade.
Correct.
Is that Presti and Brad Stevens, the whole Boston OKC. There was a dynamic already there in place for them to work together. That type of stuff matters, and that really doesn't get talked about a lot when it comes to transactions in the NBA, but relationships between two teams being very good matters.
Right, it very much does. The important thing there is Monty McNair needs to, and Luke Walton need to talk to Ben Simmons if they were going to inquire. At some point, they need to have a conversation. You cannot acquire Ben Simmons to play point guard.
No, he's your starting center.
He's either your starting center or your starting four.
If you were to do that, let's just, in our magic world, if we acquire Ben Simmons, let's just say for the trade you put out there, Bagley, Hield, and a first, right? Mm-hmm. Going to have Haliburton and Fox in the starting lineup. Haliburton can shoot. Fox, we just, again, keep hoping the shooting gets better.
Right.
You have to have two more shooters in that lineup.
Yes, you do. Now, all of a sudden, you've got Ben Simmons. Now, you've got a big who can pass beautifully,
mm-hmm.
who can anchor that defense.
And who can score around the basket.
Right.
With his right hand.
Number two.
Question two.
The last time a remaining team won the title was exactly 50 years ago. Also, none of the four teams have won a title since the NBA-ABA merger. Where do these playoffs rank for you?
I don't like recency bias, and I don't like hyperbole. It's very difficult for me to say, Kings fanning aside, because nothing will beat 0-2. even with the heartbreak, the lead up.
Yeah, yeah.
Kings fanning aside, I don't remember playoffs have had more fun. Game sevens, road wins, storylines.
Yeah.
The teams that aren't normally there. The fact that there's going to be an NBA champion that at minimum hasn't won in 50 years. There's a 50% chance we're going to get a champion that's never been one before.
You know, there was some unpredictability in the bubble last year, but this year's unpredictability tops it in so many different ways.
So great.
This has been my favorite playoffs, and I couldn't tell you how long. And because it's so unpredictable.
And don't tell me there aren't superstars left. Don't tell me that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George aren't superstars. Don't tell me that the two-time almost reigning until Jokic MVP is not a superstar.
What about Chris Paul? Is he still good?
Chris Paul, he's okay.
Devin Booker?
And then you have Devin Booker. Oh, by the way, Trae Young was one of the brightest. There is still, it's not LeBron.
And Red Velvet. His name's Red Velvet. How do you not include a guy named Red Velvet
there
in the conversation?
Plenty of star power, but it's the markets that are bothering people, which leads us to question three.
Question three.
All right, quickly, is it better to have more but smaller markets engaged in the NBA playoffs or less but bigger markets engaged?
So the quick answer, financially, it's better for the bigger markets to get engaged. Sorry, it is.
Yes.
I am a Sacramento guy. Long-term play. Long haul. Building equity in your home long haul. It's better to have a more small markets engaged. And by the way, last thing, Milwaukee is the smallest market left. They are the only small market left. Atlanta, Los Angeles, and Phoenix.
Big market.
Top 11 markets. Atlanta is 10. Phoenix is 11.
Also, the Bucks last team to win a title 50 years ago.
Yeah. The Bucks are the only small market team left. Let's get out of here with Phoenix as a small market team. We'll take a break.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
All righty. Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated and so many other places. He will join us. We'll ask him, why did you leave Tyrese Haliburton off your ballot and so much more? Chris is a good dude. We'll talk to him next.
When management finally gets tired and just gives up, the Carmichael Dave Show returns now.
Chris Mannix coming up. Minutes. Always good to talk to Chris. Longtime friend of the shoe. But man, testing that friendship. The only member of the media with a vote that did not use that vote on Tyrese Haliburton making the first team all rookie. What the heck? What the heck, Chris? Also fun to talk MMA and boxing with Chris. We'll sneak some of that in along with NBA playoffs. Today's poll question on Twitter. If you're the Kings and we're going to trade some combo of Buddy Hield and a pick or picks. I'm really trying to just corner people. You know, who's a more attractive fit for you, Ben Simmons or Kristaps Porzingis?
I can't believe that's a real question, and I'm sure there's people that have voted for unicorn.
Yeah, to be fair, 26%.
Still too many.
74% say Ben Simmons.
100 should say Ben Simmons.
One guy saying that Kristaps Porzingis is part of the Street Clothes All-Stars.
I would say he is definitely in that list.
A lot of people saying Miles Turner. Not either of those two.
I like Miles Turner, and I don't think it would cost you a whole lot.
I don't either.
I just don't think that's the big swing, so to speak. It'd be a good addition, but that's not the big swing. Need a bigger swing. That's like hitting a double when we need a home run.
You know, Monty's thing is, I'm going to be flexible. Which, you know, a lot of pre-workout stretching helps.
Yeah, Monty. I heard Monty has really flexible hamstrings.
Scapular push-ups.
Wow, look at you using big boy gym terms.
It's one of the things I've been taught. Helps prevent, what is it? What do they call it? It's a late onset soreness or whatever the hell that term is. You know.
Yeah, we don't want him to have that with trades. No.
But the Ben Simmons thing, the Kristaps Porzingis thing, now I'm not here to say that's the specific personnel Monty's looking for. I am in no way saying I know that Monty wants Ben Simmons or I know that Monty wants Chris. What I'm saying is if you read the smoke signals that Monty has put out, these are the types of trades he's looking to swing for. Distressed young all-stars in need of a new home.
And a hug.
Say what you want about Ben Simmons. But if the Kings acquired Ben Simmons, throw all the other crap out of there, the ridiculous salary, the lack of shooting, the lack of by the way, I got to throw this out there, lack of shooting, again, context, 56% from the field career for Ben Simmons, and a guy who's averaged 15-8-8 for his career. Now, let me add the context, but a guy who can't shoot free throws, can't shoot threes, and disappears in the fourth quarter of playoff games. All real and very fair criticisms. But what happens is if the Kings get Ben Simmons, he's instantly, at least right now, their best player, most accomplished player. He's a 24-year-old two-time All-Star in four seasons, three-time All-Star, excuse me, and two-time All-Defense first team. He becomes their best defender. He becomes their only All-Star, at least at this point. Now, that doesn't take away the other stuff. But the Kings get better. And the people saying things like, well, yeah, but hey, he chokes in the playoffs. You know what? In order, here's what I say. Right now, as a Kings fan, in order to have a, I'd love to have a guy that went just 3-for-3 in the fourth quarter of a seven-game playoff in the conference semifinals, because that means my team is in the conference semis. That's how tough it is for Kings fans right now. I want Philly's problems. Please. Joining us right now, old friend of the show. I mean, we may have issues right now, but he's a friend. Senior writer, Sports Illustrated, and DAZN Boxing. He's in the ring talking to folks afterwards. And does like Chris Mannix's schedule has got to be insane. So it's very cool that he's given us some time on a Monday morning. Chris Mannix, it's Dave, it's Jay. Good morning, how are you?
What's happening, guys?
You tell me, man, how is that? You're doing everything. Chris, you're always, every time it seems like I look at your Twitter, and I do look at your Twitter quite often, you're taking on this new project, you're joining this thing. I mean, you have like, you must have like seven W-2s or 1099s every single April.
It's actually funny. I do. Like, it's the most complicated thing. Like, to the point where, like, I occasionally find one from, like, some small thing that I did that I didn't submit. I'm like, this is definitely going to lead to the IRS, like, knocking at my door for, like, their $75 off of, like, you know, whatever I was doing. But doing, like, you know, I always say, guys, like, when you write something about somebody, you should be, like, in the locker room afterwards if it's negative. And to the point of what we're going to talk about with Halliburton, if you vote for something, you should be able to stand up to it. So I'm happy to talk about this.
You see, and that's why I love Chris. He's coming on in the Sacramento Kings market. The first chance he got, I did not have to chase Chris around. First time I asked, boom, here comes Chris. And what we're going to ask about is simply this. One media member, one and one only, decided not to put Tyrese Halliburton on the all-rookie first team. Now, friends bicker sometimes, friends disagree, but friends should always give friends an opportunity to explain themselves. Chris, why is Tyrese Halliburton not a first-team all-rookie guy for you?
You know, it's funny. I heard from you. I did hear from members of the Kings organization and certainly plenty of Kings fans on social media. Let me kind of – like, let me say this first. The all-rookie teams are my least favorite things to vote for because – You don't get a true understanding of who's top five, who's second five based on, I think, 1 year. Because some guys are on really good teams that don't post high numbers. Some guys are on bad teams that don't post do post high numbers. And, you know, I have a hard time sometimes, you know, sort of sorting through that. Now, there are more often than not, when I'm voting for anything, not just rookie, I lean towards guys on winners. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, if a guy's putting up decent numbers on a winner, I kind of naturally gravitate towards that. That, in some ways, explains Desmond Bane, who I had there. In some ways, explains Emmanuel Quickley, that I had there. Doesn't explain Sadiq Bey, but I thought Sadiq Bey's numbers were so good. And the second part of my rationale is that this year, as much as any other, I looked at durability. I looked at games played. And I think Bay played 70 games or something like that. Both Quickley and Bane played more games than Tyrese Halliburton. I'm not sitting here saying it was like this wide. There really was no gap. It was like a sliver of gap between, in my mind, between all these guys. And I was honestly shocked that I was the only one that did it, which, you know, immediately made me look back at the numbers. I make notes on this stuff, and I make a bunch of phone calls. Because you're right, like, people that point out on social media, like, no, it's a national media guy. Doesn't watch a ton of Kings games. I'm not going to sit here and say I watch every Sacramento Kings game.
What?
All that being said, like, before the trade deadline, I watched a lot of Kings games. Because in addition, one of the jobs I have is I do TV in Boston, and the Celtics were hot after Harrison Barnes. So I did watch a lot of Kings games prior to that March trade deadline. I like winners, and I like the more durable guys. And that is what pushed the three guys that were in competition with Halliburton on my ballot ahead of him overall.
Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated, joining us. So there you go, Kings fans. There's your explanation. Please, let's not light Twitter on fire today. Like we
I love it. That is like fuel. Like let's, I mean, you should. I mean, I actually love it that Kings fans are so committed. Like Kings fans, I'm not just blowing smoke. You guys know this. Like they're some of the best basketball fans in the NBA. They deserve to have a player like Halliburton. I'll tell you what, Halliburton, outside of the two guys finished, the two top guys, he's probably going to have the best career. I think if I had to pick a guy having the best career, he'd be right up there inside the top three. So that guy's unquestionably, I think, a future star in this league.
Chris, a guy that's a star right now is Ben Simmons, but obviously with the Sixers having their exit yesterday in the semis against the Hawks, so many question marks surrounding this team, surrounding the personnel. What do you make of the whole Ben Simmons situation in Philadelphia, and do you see him there next year?
Well, no. The short answer to that is no, I don't see him there next year. And look, I think this song has been played. Like, you kind of know what you are with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. It's not just those two, but this year they added enough shooting to that group where you couldn't make the excuse at the end of the year that they need to add more floor spacers and Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid will be okay. I mean, the fourth quarter numbers for Ben Simmons in the series were astonishing. Not attempting a shot in the last four games in the fourth quarter, not making a shot in all seven games in the fourth quarter. You can't be an A or a B guy on a team, on a winning team, and put up numbers like that. On top of that, if you went into this already thinking that Simmons was done, on top of that, you've got Joel Embiid kind of not so subtly trashing him afterwards, and Doc Rivers, not so subtly, not backing him up, entirely. He did say we still believe in him, but he was asked directly, do you think Ben Simmons can be a point guard on a championship team? And he said, I don't know. So, look, I think Daryl Morey, who, remember, inherited Ben Simmons, like he didn't draft him. I think this is the offseason that Daryl aggressively shops him. Now, I do think that they may have missed a huge opportunity not trading him before the year. I mean, you look back in Monday morning quarterback, a Harden trade was there. You could have made a Harden trade with Ben Simmons as the centerpiece. They elected not to do it, and now you can't get 50 cents on the dollar for Ben Simmons. Like, you may be able to interest Portland and C.J. McCollum, which would kind of make sense for both sides, but, Ben Simmons' trade value, and I asked a bunch of executives about this immediately after the game via text, and all of them said his trade value is absolutely cratered in this postseason.
Chris Mannix with us. If you are a GM, and I want to get back to you talking to other GMs, if you're a GM, are you leaning more towards this is, a sloppy analogy, Chris, but this is a healthy, defensive-minded Markelle Fultz situation. Obviously, not an injury deal like Markelle, but the mental aspect where this kid ain't going to recover, or are you looking at a distressed asset, 24 years old, 3 out of 4 all-star teams in his career, 2 out of 4 all-defensive first teams? Are you looking at a diamond in the rough? Where are you leaning at this point?
Yeah, I still think there's enormous recovery upside, for lack of a better phrase, for Ben Simmons. It's a little shocking that the shooting hasn't come around. I mean, it's not like, I mean, there's some weirdness to it. Like, there are still people in the NBA that think he's shooting with the wrong hand. Like, I mean, that is still a thing that's pervasive in the NBA.
Yeah.
But it is a little shocking that he hasn't improved. Like, a guy that comes into the NBA without a jump shot, most of the time, improves it through work and a tweak in mechanics. Kawhi Leonard is a great example. Kawhi Leonard came to the NBA without a discernible three-point shot. Didn't shoot that much when he was at San Diego State. He gets to San Antonio. He works with Chip England, who is one of the great shot doctors down with the Spurs, changes his form, and now has become an incredibly reliable three-point shooter. So it's somewhat astonishing that Ben Simmons, at this stage of his career, been in the league, what, 6-7 years, has not even moderately improved, like has made no improvement, still is a disaster at the free throw line. And look, if there's a visual that encapsulates Ben Simmons, it's him passing up on that layup, on that dunk attempt to make a pass to his teammate there. I mean, that to me shows an incredible lack of confidence in your ability to make free throws. And that's something, wherever he goes, maybe the next team gets through to him, but if until he does, he is always going to be this player who's got a lot of great attributes, but not championship attributes.
Talking about the dump off to Matisse Thybulle, 1 of 2 free throws. Thybulle hit, which is what prompted the Joel Embiid shot. Is it possible, if you're a team looking to trade for Ben Simmons, I've read this too, you know, that he's a natural right-hander shooting left because of his dad's influence or whatever you want to read. And that's kind of one of those, like we said before, Charlie Sheen, wear the skull and crossbones glasses in Major League and watch it turn around deals. But is Ben Simmons, in your mind or in GM's minds, is it also possible he's out of position? Do you see him in the future as a possible, you know, I've heard 4 or 5 Draymond Green type guy?
I mean, Brett Brown kind of tried that last year in the bubble. It had varying degrees of success. I do think Ben's, you know, Ben is most useful as a point guard because he can defend point guards. I mean, you saw him, you know, towards the end of that game when he was in, he was hounding Trae Young pretty well. And the minutes he spent on Trae Young, I mean, Trae did not shoot the ball well in this game. And I think Ben Simmons had a lot to do with that. So I think he's okay at the point guard position as long as he can guard it at the level he's guarding it. But if you're a team acquiring Ben Simmons, you almost have to have 4 other shooters out there on the floor. And regardless of that, you've got to get him in the lab and get him comfortable shooting free throws and get him to a high level shooting free throws, or else he's going to continue to be useless out there in the fourth quarter because there will be hack a Ben and he won't have confidence going to the basket knowing he's going to get fouled every time. Now, changing your form, your stroke, is a deeply personal thing for players. Like, you know, some guys come in and say, screw it. We saw it with Lonzo Ball, LaMelo Ball, same thing. Both of them came into the NBA and were kind of like, my shot's fine. It goes in. Lonzo actually changed his sum this year with positive results, but you have to be willing to do it. So wherever Ben goes, like, you know, the team that acquires him has to kind of sit down with him before and say, look, we want to work with you, but you're going to have to agree to make some radical changes. Like, we think we can get you to another level, but you have to agree to buy in to everything that we're doing. Otherwise, it's just going to be the same song on repeat for Ben Simmons year after year.
Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix joining us. Chris, I want to stay in the Eastern Conference. The Nets lose to the Bucks. Bucks move on. A lot of talk that this might be what will keep Budenholzer's job in Milwaukee. Do you think Budenholzer's safe now that they're in the conference finals, or do they need to get to the NBA finals and, hell, win the championship for Budenholzer to be back next year?
Well, I think he was definitely gone if they had lost game 6. And, you know, Rick Carlisle was at, you know, he would never admit this because he's the president of the Coaches Association, but that's the job that people around Rick Carlisle say that he wanted. I think they still have to win this series. I don't know about the finals, though. You know, you look at the landscape, they'd have a great shot against either Phoenix or the Clippers, given their circumstances right now. But I think at least the finals are where the Bucks have to get. I mean, Atlanta played great, you know, in the last 2 series, but, you know, the Bucks are going to be a pretty substantial favorite going into this series. So if they wind up getting beat by a Hawks team that has never been here before, you know, a whole bunch of young guys on that roster, I think that will keep the door open for a coaching change in Milwaukee. But yeah, he absolutely saved his job by winning this last series. And, you know, if they get to the finals, I think that will ensure that Mike Budenholzer comes back.
Chris Mannix with us. Speaking of questionable in-game adjustments, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fought Anderson Silva over the weekend. Chavez Jr., the king of not making any adjustments, and that was a split decision win for Spider. I know you've gotten this question a ton because you work in the business. I want to try to curveball it just a little bit and not say, is this good for boxing? Because guess what? People are watching and paying and whatever. My question is, a longtime MMA and boxing guy just like you, is this recent popularity of these circus bouts, for lack of a better term, is it exposing some of the deficiencies with boxing, with the alphabet, belts and some of the things that boxing needs to look in the mirror about?
You know, I think they might be mutually exclusive there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess there's some connectivity in a way, in the sense that boxing fans are so starved for something compelling, yeah, or at least what they believe is going to be compelling, that they go to this kind of circus-like stuff. It's like, you know, what's that analogy about being in the desert? You're so thirsty, you drink the sand.
Yep.
Like, that's kind of what it feels like with these events. I do think these events do have a shelf life, and we're starting to see some of it peter out a little bit. Like, the interest in the Mayweather-Logan Paul fight wasn't quite what I think promoters had hoped it would be. It still did over 1 million pay-per-view buys, but I think they were hoping for something seismic to come out of that. And look, De La Hoya is going to come back September 11th against some guy named Vitor Belfort. I have no idea who he is. And he's probably going to kick the crap out of him, but I don't know too many people that are eager to see that. I mean, Silva, more power to Anderson Silva. Like, he was on my podcast last week, and I basically mocked him for half of it, like saying that, wow, like, you know, what are you doing, man? You're, you know, this is dumb. Like, boxers and MMA, they don't really coexist. And he was confident, but to me, this was more about Chavez being just a disgrace,
yep,
than Anderson Silva all of a sudden, you know, discovering a new identity as a boxer. It should be a wake-up call for boxers. You know, I look at these events, these circus events, as being like the new autograph signing. Like, guys have discovered a way to make money off their name and their likeness. Like, it used to be show up at big fights, sign autographs, take pictures, make a couple bucks. Now it's like, all right, well, we can get people to buy, you know, me fighting an MMA guy on pay-per-view. Like, great, let's go do that. So, but if you're a boxer, like a current boxer, you got to look at that and say, look, maybe I can do that down the road, but I'm going to build myself up first. I'm going to build a brand. And guys like De La Hoya and Mayweather and others and Chavez Sr., who did one, like, they have built themselves an identity through major fights and stuff that people remember for decades longer. So if you're a boxer, you can't, like, complain about what kind of numbers these guys are doing when the reality is you're not serving the boxing fan with anything good. I mean, this past weekend was a good example. I mean, yeah, Jamal Charlo gets Juan Montiel. Who cares? Jaime Munguia gets Camille Jarameta. A fight that I called that Jarameta did an incredible job looking at, like, a human punching bag. It just, like, you've got to give more to the boxing fans to make them prefer your fights over theirs.
Chris, we got the third match between Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury coming up for the WBC belt. Two-part question here. One, do you see a scenario where Wilder actually wins this fight? And number two, are we ever going to unify these alphabet titles at some point? Is Anthony Joshua going to fight the WBC champion?
Yeah, I mean, well, I worry if Wilder wins that it'll never happen, because they've gone down that path a few times. If Fury wins, it absolutely will happen, probably in December, maybe in the UK if they can get enough money together to put, you know, 100,000 at Wembley or whatever it's going to be at that time of year. Look, Wilder can win because he's got the one-punch power. I mean, we saw it with George Foreman, Michael Moore. We've seen it countless times in other weight classes. Like, all you need is one shot to finish a guy off, and Wilder has shown it. I just worry that it's almost like his brain has been scrambled up at this point. Like, he has been spouting some absolutely insane conspiracy theories, whether it's about Fury, whether it's about his own training team, whether it's about the referee being drunk. Like, there's just so much that he's been saying. And on top of that, like, he's refusing to face any kind of scrutiny for it. Like, he shows up at the press conference where there are some legitimate assembled media there, and he answers no questions. But then he disappears and does, like, these YouTube videographers, and they'll talk to friendly outlets, and he won't, like, explain in deeper detail exactly why he believes some of the things he believes. So I Fury beat him so bad last time that unless Fury is out of it, unless Fury is so kind of discombobulated by the collapse of the Joshua talks, that I think it's almost the same outcome. I think Fury bullies him, Wilder's fighting off his back foot, and eventually gets beat up enough that the referee will step in and stop the fight.
Last question for Chris Mannix, nice enough to join us this morning. Chris, I want to finish on a philosophical fight question. You and I are same generation, around the same age, and I grew up in a semi-post Tyson world. I obviously have fond memories and decent memories of Mike Tyson, but for me, the golden age was Gotti Ward, Felix Trinidad, Oscar De La Hoya, Ike Corte. You know, that HBO After Dark every weekend, and a new and exciting matchup, Sugar Shane Mosley, and that was around the turn of the century. And one of the things I've grappled with, no pun intended, is MMA, which started in 1993 and was you know, being held on river boats in Mississippi. And as we got into the turn of the century and Dana White and the Fertitta brothers took over, really, really started to legitimize itself. I look at today and I look at boxing and I know there's storylines there and I know there's talent there, but the golden days, and I sound old now, of those HBO After Dark De La Hoya years seem to be very few and far between. Chris, my question is this. Is it that boxing, the talent, the storylines, HBO After Dark, which doesn't exist, has it fallen off? Or has MMA siphoned a lot of that storyline and a lot of those fans? Or is it somewhere in the middle, Chris?
Well, I do think they've siphoned off a lot of those fans. They get them at a young age, right? Like, it's not like they're taking grizzled 40 or 50-year-old boxing fans and turning them to MMA. Right. They're catching the young fans early on with compelling action, good matchups, and making them natural MMA fans. That's number one. And what MMA has done, in a way, has adopted a lot of what we saw in that boxing golden age, where you had frequently the best find the best. Well, we didn't care about wins and losses. I mean, I don't even know how many losses De La Hoya has. I don't even know how many losses Shane Mosley has. I mean, you go back to the 90s. I mean, you kind of knew that Roy Jones was undefeated for a while until he went up, you know, until he had the disqualification. Then another fight, the heavyweights, how many losses did they? I don't know. Nowadays, fighters, you know, basically tattoo their undefeated record to their foreheads. But that just generally doesn't matter. Like, the biggest star in UFC is Conor McGregor. What does he have, 4 losses? 5? I don't know. I mean, it's until boxers start to throw out this idea that being undefeated, you know, validates you in some way, boxing is going to continue to exist in this universe. I mean, you could sit there right now, take out a piece of pen and a piece of paper, and make a bunch of compelling matchups that would easily rival anything you could see in UFC. The difference is UFC makes them, and boxing just talks about them. And until that changes, you're going to see a continued rise in the adoption of young fans by UFC and a continued decline in young fans in boxing.
Well, and I'm not just saying this. You see Chris in the ring with DAZN and all the work that actually DAZN's been doing with boxing, with the pay-per-view model. And I love boxing. I think there's room for both MMA and boxing. It's not a – you shouldn't be pitted against each other. And anytime somebody is investing in boxing and broadcasting the sport and really bringing it to new fans, I'm a huge fan of. And Chris is certainly a huge part of that. He of the 10 W-2s, also with SI, and so much more. Chris, always great talking to you. You know, Sadiq Bey, Tyrese, I'm going to let that go, dude. Okay. God bless you. And we'll have fun with that, I think, for years to come.
Hey, shout out to the Kings organization, who I'm sure are listening to this and will not be satisfied at all with any of my answers.
No, they will not. That's why we brought you on, my man. Take care. Keep working hard. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, guys.
All right. See you, Chris. That's Chris Mannix. We will take a break.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next.
Manuel Quickly, come on. I love Chris, though. And he came right on to answer the question. Good for him. Scott Howard Cooper will come on and answer questions about his forthcoming book on Steve Kerr. We'll talk NBA playoffs. We'll do it all right after this.